And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. We've got a great show lined up for you on this Thursday, July 25th. We'll hear from all sorts of people. First off, we'll hear from Rick Truffle and talk to him about his upcoming concert at Food Truck Friday. We'll take a look at the King Island Christmas weekend performances. Ryan Scott from the Department of Fish and Game will update us on the bear situation in Juno. And we'll also talk to Craig Joering about his presentation tonight, based on his missionary work in Mexico. And as with every Thursday, we'll hear Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, and we'll get things started here with National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. National Native organizations say they'll move forward with a civil rights lawsuit after action Wednesday by the South Carolina Supreme Court in the adoptive couple versus baby girl case, also known as Baby Veronica. The state's high court denied petitions for a rehearing. Three-year-old Veronica is in the middle of a custody fight between the father, Dustin Brown, a Cherokee Nation citizen, and Matt and Melanie Capobianco, the couple the mother chose for adoption. Brown was given custody under the Indian Child Welfare Act. The girl has been living with him for more than a year and a half in Oklahoma. The South Carolina Supreme Court a year ago found that denying the adoption and awarding custody to Brown was in Veronica's best interest. The case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and in June, the nation's highest court sent it back to South Carolina, where last week the court reversed its earlier ruling and decided the adoption could proceed. The National Congress of American Indians, the Native American Rights Fund, and the National Indian Child Welfare Association are preparing to file litigation, claiming the child's civil rights were violated because there was no hearing on her best interest. The petitions for rehearing were filed by both the Cherokee Nation and Brown. The tribe says it's considering their next steps. Native people in the northern Rocky Mountain West are remembering one of their most influential leaders. Gordon Belcourt was executive director of the Montana-Wyoming Tribal Leaders Council from 1998 until his death last week. Montana Public Radio's Dan Boyce reports Belcourt was known for building that organization into a powerful regional voice on Native issues, especially public health.
Gordon Belcourt's daughter Annie says her father's traditional Blackfeet tribal name means mixed iron boy.
And in Blackfeet, that is pronounced Meekskamikskamapi.
A name that reflects strength. And Annie says he carried that essence with him throughout his life. Raised in poverty on the Blackfeet Reservation, the oldest of nine children, he graduated valedictorian of his high school and went on to earn his master's in public health from UC Berkeley.
He dedicated his life to volunteer work, to helping his community, to really helping his family and any Native person.
When he took over as head of the Montana-Wyoming Tribal Leaders Council in 98, the organization was nearly bankrupt, had one employee. Now U.S. Senator John Tester says it's a force.
Because of his hard work, they have a tremendous amount of clout.
A unified voice of the 10 federally recognized tribes in Montana and Wyoming. Belcourt's staff at the Tribal Leaders Council say late in life he put much of his focus into water rights issues and trying to lower rates of alcoholism and suicide on reservations. Program manager Bethany Fatupaito.
He was very passionate about what he did, and he had a strong heart for those that he was fighting for.
He had been ill for several months prior to his death. He believed strongly in his traditional Blackfeet faith, that dying is only a door to another chapter. He was 68 years old. For National Native News, I'm Dan Boyce in Helena, Montana.
Native journalists have a new tool to help them access free legal information. The Native American Journalists Association recently announced the creation of a legal hotline for its members. It provides educational resources for legal and ethical issues surrounding Native American media. NAJA members can email or call the hotline and expect a response within 48 hours. More information can be found online at naja.com. During this week in 2011, the U.S. Justice Department held a Native American Issues Subcommittee and Attorney General's Advisory Committee meeting in Rapid City, South Dakota. The meeting included 30 U.S. attorneys with some Indian Country population in their districts to discuss a variety of issues in tribal communities. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation is seeking to fill two positions in our national studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We are accepting applications for a senior producer for Native America Calling and resource development specialist to sell underwriting. Full job descriptions can be found at NativeAmericaCalling.com. Click on Employment.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser, and I'm very lucky to have in the studio with me Rick Chossel, Nara Conlin, and her mom, Kareem Conlin. And they're here to talk to us about the Juneau Student Symphony concert that's happening this Friday. Thanks for joining me in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. And so, of course, Rick, we won't talk too long about this, but this is kind of your bon voyage from Juneau. And because of that, I'm sure you chose some very special music to play here. So what can we expect to hear at this concert on Friday?
Well, actually, we'll call it a farewell concert, but it's so that the whole orchestra fares well in our tour. We're going down to Portland next week to play for the Quadrennial International Montessori Congress. There'll be 5,000 or so Montessori teachers, administrators, professors, and aficionados, trainers in Portland. And we've been invited to play some really special and important music. 2 years ago when I broached the idea with the organizers of the Congress, I said, I have this piece that I've written based on Maria Montessori's philosophy of human development. It's in sonata allegro form, if that means anything to our listeners. I'm sure it does to some.
Of course.
And each part of the form is a different stage in human development. Everything from rowdy teenagers to imitating toddlers. It's in the music. It's kind of an academic idea, but it's very pretty. And they thought it was a really cool idea to have, instead of a lecture or a PowerPoint presentation on some aspect of Montessori philosophy or pedagogy, that there'd be an artistic lecture, if you will.
Oh, that's great. That's
yeah,
great.
So we'll be lecturing through our music. And then this Congress, its theme is the child in nature. I'd like to expand that and just say the human in nature. And the other piece we're playing is another brand new piece in the world of classical music. We premiered it 4 years ago, and it was written as a response to a Tlingit song. The song is sometimes misnamed the Tlingit National Anthem. Aunty Yehli's song is a more sensitive name for it. And it's in three movements. It's not only does it give a nod of respect and just joy towards our land, but it's also towards our peoples here. And it is a musical icon for the orchestra itself. We perform the third movement of this piece at the end of every concert that we play. So it connects us with past, present, and future. Very special music to us.
Great.
And then we're also going to be playing The Great Gate of Kiev from Mussorgsky's Pictures at an exhibition. It's a very celebratory piece of music. And that's how we'll be opening our Friday concert. It includes one of the promenades. And if you know the music, you know the promenade is, it represents the walk from picture to picture to picture, which is a very appropriate for a conference that we're going to, because the participants will be walking from presentation to presentation. So it's a really apt and appropriate program. I'm very proud to be one of the composers, very proud to have been involved in the commission, and very proud to have been invited. They're taking 53 of us down to Portland, flying us down. So, I mean, we're not the New York Philharmonic, but we have these special aspects. Our representation of the people and the land here in Juneau really struck a chord with the organizers of the conference.
That's amazing. And Juneau gets an opportunity before you go to the concert, before you go to the conference, to hear it in concert this Friday at the Jack.
Yes, for Food Truck Friday. So you can do the yabba-dabba-doo, pull the whistle, and you're done with work and come hear us play. And you can have dinner at the same time. So it's a great opportunity. This is my last performance with the Juneau Student Symphony because, coincidentally, I'll be moving to Portland.
Wow, that's great. It's great for us that we get one last hurrah with you and the Juneau Student Symphony. So, Nara, you've been, how long have you been involved in the Juneau Student Symphony, and how old are you?
6 months.
You've been involved for 6 months, but you're very articulate for 6 months. You're 10, okay. And what instrument do you play?
Violin.
Okay, and how did you get involved in the Juneau Student Symphony?
Well,
she was badgered by her conductor and her violin
Lisa
teacher.
Lisa Miles kind of invited me.
Oh, great.
Lisa Miles, but I think, you know, what's nice about the Student Symphony is that Nara has, you know, peers or older peers that have started to do the Student Symphony. And so I think, you know, she started violin when she was 3 1/2 and, you know, saw kind of the progression. Plus, one thing that's been really nice with Rick is that he's invited, you know, Glacier Valley, the jam group has been able to play with the Student Symphony. Heartstrings has played a couple of times with the Student Symphony. And so Nara's had an opportunity to participate with that. And then it's just a natural progression, which is, you know, it's a really fortunate thing to have. In our community.
Yeah, and I have some friends who are adults that play with the Student Symphony. So do you play also?
I play percussion, and really I got involved because Nara played last winter, and then she had such a great time, and then I was like, well, maybe what could I play? I could play percussion, and it's been really fun, and it's something. And there's lots of family groups that do the Student Symphony together, and that's a really special time.
Yeah.
In the orchestra for this performance, I was figuring this out. We have people. I had to know this for the plane reservations. So excuse me out there for letting the world know how old you are. But we have people who were born in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and aughts. So we have quite the age range in this group.
Well, that's fabulous to get everybody together to play some music, and what better thing?
Well, the music, I often say, and excuse me if you've heard this before, but it's like the campfire around which we all gather to sing songs. I mean, the music itself is the fire. It's the thing that brings us together, and it will level a 9-year-old with a 62-year-old. I mean, they're both trying to make beautiful music and not make themselves too foolish, and they're both scared. You know, they really understand. You know, a little nervous about the performance and excited about their success.
Mm-hmm. So. Nara, how long, so you've been playing with the Student Symphony for 6 months, you said.
Yeah.
And what do you think is kind of in your future for the Student Symphony and playing violin?
Well, that's a good question, kind of. I kind of want to keep playing for a very long time because I love it. I just love playing with a group.
Oh, great.
And what Nara and anybody in the Student Symphony can look forward to, this is kind of like the Farm League team, the Farm League Orchestra, the second string orchestra for the Juneau Symphony. And many Juneau Symphony people came from the Student Symphony. Franz Felkel, for example, he played with us for many years, and then he ended up coaching violins with us for a while. And, you know, he's going on to wonderful things. But he's just one example. My daughter is another example, who played in the Student Symphony and eventually joined the Juneau Symphony. So there's that opportunity, Nara, as you get better and better and need more and more challenging music. There's another great orchestra in this town. We're lucky to have two.
Yeah, that's a really great opportunity for everybody. And so just one more time, I want to get the details out about where we can hear this fabulous, fabulous music. And when?
It's tomorrow. It's at the Jack. It's at 5:30. And just come. We want you to be there. I always say to the orchestra, we play much better. The more people we have, the better we play. So come.
That's great. Well, thank you, Rick Trussell, Nara Conlin, and Corrine Conlin, for talking to us about this fabulous concert, and have a great trip to Portland. It's just going to be a great experience.
Thank you, Shona.
Thank you.
And coming up right next here is Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, July 25th, 2013. It was on this day in 1897 that the novelist Jack London left San Francisco for the Klondike to join the Gold Rush. He was just 21. A few weeks earlier, a ship had arrived in San Francisco from the Klondike carrying more than $1 million worth of gold, and London got his stepsister to mortgage her house and lend him the money for the trip. A long, hard trip it was over the famous Chilkoot Pass. And winter came before London could even start looking for gold. He spent that winter in a little fur trader's cabin the size of a tool shed, reading the two books he brought with him, Dante's Inferno and Milton's Paradise Lost. By spring, he'd realized that all the good claims had already been made, so instead of looking for gold, he talked to people and he gathered their stories. He almost died of scurvy on the way home, but he went on to write about his experiences in his book, The Call of the Wild, which became one of the most popular books of the time. It's the birthday of saxophonist Johnny Hodges, born in Cambridge, Massachusetts in 1906. He took up the soprano sax when he was 14 years old and later specialized in the alto. Hodges joined Duke Ellington's orchestra in 1928 and was the soloist and mainstay of the ensemble until his death in 1970. Among his best-known solos are those on Warm Valley and Passion Flower. His nickname, Rabbit, came from his love of lettuce and tomato sandwiches. As he grew older, Hodges used fewer and fewer notes in his solos, preferring to play more simply by staying close to the melody. It's the birthday of the painter Thomas Eakins, born in Philadelphia in 1844. He painted realistic American scenes of the late 1800s, such as Max Schmidt in a Single Skull and The Gross Clinic. Today is the anniversary of the day when Bob Dylan went electric at the Newport Folk Festival in 1965, to the great consternation of folk music fans. Actually, Bob Dylan had grown up listening to rock and roll. He loved Elvis. He said once, "When I first heard Elvis's voice, I just knew that I wasn't going to work for anybody and nobody was going to be my boss. Hearing him for the first time was like busting out of jail." Dylan played in rock bands in high school, but when he went to college at the University of Minnesota, he fell into the folk scene and started singing songs of Woody Guthrie. He performed wearing blue jeans and a work shirt. But in 1964, he heard the Beatles and other British bands who played rock and roll the way Dylan remembered hearing it as a kid. He did some rock and roll on his album, Bringing It All Back Home, and in 1965, he came out with his big hit that summer, Like a Rolling Stone. And here's a poem by Krista Lucas entitled, The Day I Die. The day I die will be a Saturday or a Tuesday, maybe, a day with a weather forecast, a high and a low. There will be news, a scandal, a disaster, some good deed. The mail will come. People will walk their dogs. The day I die will be a certain day, a square on a calendar page to be flipped up and pinned at the end of the month. It may be August or November. School will be out or in. Somebody will have to catch a plane. There will be messages, bills to pay, things left undone. It will be a day like today or tomorrow, a date I might note with a reminder, an appointment, or nothing at all. The Day I Die, a poem by Krista Lucas from her collection, Fans of My Unconscious, published by Black Rock Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. This is Billy Collins, hoping you will join us next time here on the Writer's Almanac.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. Thanks so much for tuning in. And in the studio with me, I'm very, very excited to have Sharon Gateman and Deborah Smith to talk about their fabulous upcoming trip to King, well, to King Island, really.
We're going to King Island. Forget the fringe.
Yeah, so they're here to talk about King Island. So tell us all about it, please.
Do you want to start?
I'll start. We're very excited about, we leave on the 31st for Scotland, where we will be performing at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, along with about 2,500 productions, our newest best friends. And in preparation for that, of course, we are doing shows here in Juneau just to get ready to go, including a pay-as-you-can preview tonight at the Jack at 7:30. And then our performances are tomorrow night, 7:30, Saturday afternoon at 3, which is a sing-along.
That's where we expect you, Shona.
Yeah,
oh,
that's come.
Fun.
The words
bring
will
the
be
whole
up
band,
there, you know,
just come.
And then 7:30 Saturday night.
Wow, that's great. That's great. And so what kind of preparation, because, you know, I've talked to you a lot, Sharon, about this project on the radio and off the radio. What's gone into this, and how many people are going? And
well, you know what? I like to say to people that, you know, we kind of fancy ourselves as Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland, you know.
I've got a barn.
Yeah. We were just sitting there a few years ago wanting to do King Island Christmas at least one more time so Ree and Jean could see it. That was in 2010. And we tried to get every other theater company to do it, but finally, we just said, wow, why don't we just put it on ourselves? And we did in 2010, thinking that we would make a donation in Ree and Jean's name to the Community Foundation Arts Program, about $2,000, and we ended up giving them almost $13,000 for the 7 performances we did that year. And then we immediately started thinking, well, we got to do it again. Every other year is probably a good fit. And while we're at it, we know what the Fringe is. We've heard about it. I've been there. Deb's been to Edinburgh. Let's take the show there. And the rest is history. I mean, we've been climbing over our own mountain. We've been going over our own mountain for 2 years now. And we've kind of held back with a lot of stuff because the high school kids are going to the American High School Theater Festival, which is also in the Fringe.
That's right.
Right. So, but, yeah, and as you said, we'll be, or Deb did, there's about 2,500 productions going on in over 200 venues. And the things we've learned this past year about how, no, you don't just get a venue. You have to kind of audition your show for the venue. And we were just lucky that we connected with this wonderful venue in a great location, and the person who runs it's Hawaiian. And I said, look, you're Hawaiian,
we're
Alaskan, we relate. Put us in your place, please. And it's really, and he's a turnkey, thank goodness. So we don't have to hang our own lights, that's what Deb can speak about, or promote our show as much as we would have to if we just went into a room like the studio and had to build a lighting grid and a stage and everything else. So, Deb, talk about the production.
Well, it's very interesting. This particular venue we are using is a pop-up venue. In other words, it's created just for the month of August for the Fringe in a hotel in a room that's probably a large conference room during the year. And then magic happens, and it becomes a performing venue. But it does present its own set of challenges, and that's one of the things we've been dealing with. It is a smaller stage than the stage at the Jack. It is seats 85 people, which is a small venue. it has a lower ceiling. Well, most ceilings are lower than the Jack because it was a basketball court. And it has very structured rehearsal times, and your storage area is very small, so you can't bring a big set, which we wouldn't have anyway. Pardon me. But to try to accommodate the, our production into that space has been one of our challenges.
Yeah. So how many people are headed over with you?
Well, what I was going to say, it's interesting. There's about 40 people going, and the other night, because part of my job is to try to fill the house, and, you know, I realized the other night, oh, my gosh, we're bringing 40 people. It seats 85. We could just put our people in the audience.
Perfect.
So they could sing from there, and I'll feel a lot better.
That's great.
But, yeah, 40 of us. These people, both the adults and the kids, have been fundraising basically since last September, raised almost $140,000. We have about $15,000 more to go. We'll do it when we get back, but we're so close now, we're all just charging everything.
That's just amazing. We have about 30 more seconds.
Okay.
I want to make sure we get the, actually the times and dates of performance here in Juneau before
yes.
you
okay.
head
yeah,
off.
Let's
yeah.
not
we
confuse
go.
It.
Okay.
Go, Deb.
Tonight, 7:30 is a preview, pay as you can. Friday night, 7:30. Saturday night, 7:30 are performances, and Saturday afternoon is a performance that is a sing-along. So we tickets are available at the Jack or at Hearthside. We hope to see you there.
Right at the door.
Yes, and or at the door,
at the
of course,
door, yes.
tickets at the door. Well, thank you so much, and have a great, great trip. When do you leave again?
I'm leaving on Monday because I got to start doing my thing.
The rest right. of us leave Wednesday.
Oh, wow. Well, have a fabulous trip and break all sorts of legs.
Thank you.
Thank you, and check out King Island Christmas, and here's a little music from King Island Christmas. Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. What a great opportunity to check out King Island Christmas tonight, this weekend, before they go on their huge trip to the Fringe Festival. And I'm very lucky to have in the studio with me Stephanie Sell and Ryan Scott from the Department of Fish and Game to talk to us about the Bears going on in Juneau. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so what is going on with the Bears in Juneau?
A lot. You know, it's that time of year where some of the activity is kind of peaking. We see it just about every year in July. And we'll kind of go through a peak in July. It'll slow down a little bit in August, and then we'll go back up again. It's very normal. So we've got bears kind of everywhere, you know, throughout the town right now, from Douglas and downtown through the valley, Lemon Creek, all the way out the road. So it's super important at this point to really be paying attention to any kind of attractants around. You know, primarily we talk about trash and keeping that contained and in a secure area until the day of pickup. But don't forget, you know, even today, I'm still hearing about bird feeders out. Bears get locked in on bird feeders. They're just going to keep coming, and they're going to ruin your bird feeders. Chicken coops are another big one. And we went through kind of a rash of coop robbers a few weeks ago, and then this morning we get a call about another one. So it's, you know, there's lots of things to be thinking about. Fish scraps, whatever might bring a bear in, needs to be secure, you know, be it trash, fish scraps need to be thrown away in a secure place, bird feeders should just be gone right now, chicken coops, duck ponds, electric fences are the answer. Electricity is the ultimate equalizer when it comes to bears, and it's a nationwide issue. People are talking about it and working on this. Anywhere you have birds, like chickens or ducks, people are raising, and black bears, it's something that really behooves people to have a chicken coop or have an electric fence around those things. So there are lots of bears moving around, everything from, you know, big males to females with cubs to, and we're still getting a lot of yearling bears out there. These guys are juveniles. They don't know what to do. They haven't figured out all the rules, but that is slowing down a little bit. But those guys, they definitely push the buttons a little bit and push the boundaries. So
they were pretty active at the beginning of the summer, that's for sure.
They were, yeah.
So as far as people, you know, because I have a friend who works for the police department, and they get tons and tons of calls. And so what is the best avenue for a resident to go? You know, what do we do if there is a bear and it's disruptive? What do we
do? Sure, yeah. It's a great question. It's really important for people to know how to get a hold of us. So the way I would divide it up is, if a bear is simply there or kind of coming around, or you have questions about a bear or bear behavior, or it's not a direct public safety issue, call us. We're down in Douglas, 465-4265. We'll talk through all that stuff with you and help you come up with an idea of how to stop this from happening. And it also lets us know what's going on around town and kind of who to be keeping an eye on. If there's ever a direct public safety issue, you know, a bear is coming towards you or is acting aggressively or pushes on a door or goes into your car and is locked in your car or something like that, call the police department. We work with the police department all summer long. We have a great relationship. And if they can't get there for some reason, they know how to find us 24 hours a day. And, you know, most of the time they'll respond and call us. So we work very cooperatively throughout the summer. So direct public safety threat, call the police department. You can call us as well. And if it's, you know, less of a direct threat, call Fish and Game and we can help work through whatever's going on.
Great. And Stephanie, so, you know, we're talking about just kind of bears in town right now, but there's tons of, you know, bear awareness that you can have when you're actually playing in the woods and fishing and all sorts of things. Can you kind of fill us in on what's going on there and best practices?
Absolutely. So I know that a lot of people are actually in the process of heading down to Sweetheart Creek or going out to Fish Creek. The same bear stuff applies there. You know, when you're actively fishing and cleaning your fish out there, bears are going to be attracted to that, and they're going to approach you. If you don't stand your ground, what you want to do is, you know, make sure all that stuff's cleaned up. You know, we promote stop, chop, and throw. So, you know, take all your guts and all your food particles that you're not using and throw it in fast-moving water so the bears can't get it and they're not going to be attracted to people. You know, people are out there, you know, sometimes camping on their boats and stuff like that. Pick up your trash, you know, they're going to want it to get into coolers, you know, and encourage them not to be around by actually cleaning up all those attractants. So, you know, when bears do approach you, you know, like, definitely don't let them get your fish. Otherwise, they're just going to learn that that's an easy meal for everybody. So that just, you know, is problematic for future people using those areas.
Right. And so a lot of people have heard it, but there's a lot of new people in the town. It never hurts to hear it again. What is the best thing to do if there's a bear approaching and let's say you are filleting a fish or something like that? What is the best thing to do?
I would pick it up and leave. You know, that's oftentimes what you have to do. You just have to give it up. Not give up the fish, but just grab the stuff and walk away. You can talk to a bear. You don't need to freak out. We work with little kids early in the year, and one of our favorite things is to say, don't freak out. You know, just because there's a bear there, you don't have to get too wound up. If the bear doesn't pay any attention to you, great. Keep doing what you're doing. If the bear pays attention to you, talk to it calmly. You know, just let it identify yourself as a human. And if it wants to continue to pay attention to you or wants to approach you, ante that up a little bit. Raise your voice. Clap your hands. Hey, bear, you know, this isn't yours. And at the end of the day, if the bear doesn't want to stop, go home. You know, just give it up or, you know, move. That could be the easy solution. As Stephanie pointed out, boy, those bears, once they figure out they can push fishermen around, and it doesn't just have to be fish, any other kind of attractant, if they can push and push and push and get that reward, they're going to do it again. And so just because one person, you know, figures, well, one fish, it's not a big deal, you know, I can give him my fish and get out of here, well, the next group of people coming up the trail are now going to have to deal with that as well. And ultimately, with all this bear stuff we talk about, public safety is paramount. We want people to be safe in the woods, out fishing, at their homes, when it comes to bears. But when we make mistakes, most of the time it's the bears that pay for that. So lots of little, it's just some fairly simple things we can all do to make sure, bears and people interact appropriately.
And is there more information or just a summary of things that we've talked about here today that people can find online?
Absolutely. They can go to our website at Fish and Game. There's a lot of information about bears in general, natural history, ways to deal with bears as far as being out in the wild, so being more bear aware, we call it. I think CBJ probably has a couple things on their website as well, just reminding people on how to secure attractants properly. Another thing about Sweetheart Creek, too, I know that there's been some people that call and have rafts destroyed, so it might be appropriate, to deflate those, hang them from a tree or something like that, just so you protect your property as well.
I read recently that bears like to chew on plastic, even if it's not food related. Is that true?
Plastic and rubber.
Really?
Yeah. No, bears anything.
Are very curious.
Exactly. They're just so curious, and anything they can get a hold of and just kind of gnaw on. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, great. Is there anything else you kind of want to add before we wrap it up here?
Just real quick. We want folks to enjoy Juneau and enjoy Juneau's bears. It's a pleasure to live here, and those are part of the landscape. Keep your trash secure until the day of pickup. Don't put it out before 4 a.m. Remember, the new garbage cans that came out last summer are not bear-resistant. They need to be secured in a bear-resistant place. Other attractants, get rid of the bird feeders, throw away your fish scraps. And if there's any questions or concerns or comments, get a hold of us at 465-4265 down in Douglas.
Great. Can we get that number one more time? Because I know I've had to use it.
Yeah, no worries. It's the Department of Fish and Game in Douglas, 465-4265.
Well, Stephanie and Ryan, thank you so much. It's actually it's really important that you all come on here, and I really appreciate that you kind of give us an update. It's just so important. And more information can be found online. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
I went to his room in the middle of the night. I tiptoed inside and I turned on the light. But to my dismay, he was nowhere in sight. And I'm sure Uncle Walter went waltzing that night. He goes wah, 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 wah. Walter won't do, so he can go waltzing, wah, 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 waltzing. He can go waltzing with bears. Mom bought Uncle Walter a new suit to wear, but when he comes in, it's all covered with hair. And lately I've noticed there's several new nothing on earth Uncle Walter won't do. So he can go waltzing, wah, 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 waltzing. He can go waltzing with bears. I told Uncle Walter that he should be good and do all the things I said that he should. But I know that he'd rather be off in the woods, and I'm afraid that I'll lose him for good. He goes wah, 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 waltzing with bears, raggy bears, shaggy bears, baggy bears too, and there's nothing on earth Uncle Walter won't do.
And Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser, and with me in the studio now is Eric Niewanner and Craig Joring talking to us about a presentation that's actually happening tonight. And Craig, yeah, can you give us, you know, tell us all about what's going on this evening?
Awesome. It's at 7 p.m. at Chapel by the Lake in their fellowship room, and we'll talk about some of the poor in Mexico City, especially human trafficking, and some of the work that I do with street kids in Mexico City.
Okay. And how did this kind of partnership come about, or how do you two gentlemen know each other?
Well, Craig came up here several years ago as a summer project director for Campus Crusade, and that's when I first got to know him. And then I had a couple, I had a teenage daughter who was involved with that program, and so it was a good introduction. And then Craig and I went out fishing, so I guess that pretty well sealed the relationship there. And
funny how fish do that.
I know.
Okay. And so what, as far as what, how long have you spent doing this kind of work?
I've been in Mexico City for 7 years. I went to Mexico City with a job that was a three-year job that I was working, leading an organization. And during that time, I think I was there for a year and a half or maybe 2 years. And I loved the city, but I was not going to stay past 3 years. But there was a street that I drove down, and it's a street I took all the time. But one night I was picking someone up from the airport. It was a late flight. By the time I dropped them off, it was maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. And so I'm going down this street that I know and I've seen many times, and it was lined with young girls that were prostitutes. And
how young?
Oh, you know, probably, I mean, they look older, but you know they're not. They're like 14 or 13. And I couldn't believe it, because, like, what 14-year-old girl would want to be out here at 1 o'clock in the morning standing on the street being sold? It was horrible. And that was the day that trafficking found me. I never set out to work with human trafficking. And, I mean, it just hit me in the face, and I had to do something about it. And so at the time, I rallied some of the resources with the organization that I was working with, and then left that finished that job around a year later, and then founded the Revive Foundation in Mexico City to work with the poorest of the poor, and especially with human trafficking in Mexico.
And what kind of work does the Revive Foundation do?
What we try to do is to work on issues of injustice, and so whenever, like, there's some kind of, like, something that we can take on, like, for example, with human trafficking, tremendous resources exist around the world, internationally, for educating the population and for bringing federal legislation against human trafficking. When I first got involved, people didn't believe it. I'm like, come with me. I'll drive you down these streets, and it will blow your mind. And it did. And I think sometimes when you live in a city, it's a huge city. It's maybe one of the biggest in the world. But you don't get involved with things that don't concern you, and just for safety. And so most people just kind of do their own thing. And so we were passing this by, not even noticing that we've got trafficking taking place right out in the open in the city. And so that was the beginning, with just first of all convincing people that we have human trafficking taking place in the city, and then bringing people together to work on it. And I'm not a central player in this. I've played a part over the years, but I've been a part of it.
And so, Eric, as far as bringing, you know, Craig here to talk about this, what's kind of the connection with Juno?
Well, you know, a couple years ago, a bunch of us formed an organization called Christ Community Ministries, and one of our objectives was to facilitate community ministries in town. And young people kept coming up, you know, in the talk. And so I thought, this is a great opportunity to hear somebody that works with young people and the issues they face. Craig's familiar with Juno. A lot of people know him. And I said, this would be a great opportunity kind of for him to tell his story and to basically encourage us to talk about what's happening here in Juneau. So this is a new thing. We call it Youth Talk, and we hope that this will have more programs like this.
Oh, that's great. And is this open for is it mostly focused towards youth, or is it for everybody?
It's for everybody. Yeah, we got a program here tonight at 7 o'clock at Chapel by the Lake, where Craig will get an opportunity to share through PowerPoint presentations and his own testimony, things that are going on down there. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting program.
And is it a way that people could get involved, you know, by distance? I mean, we are in Juneau, but I imagine there's a lot of things that we can actually do.
Mm-hmm. There's tremendous ways that you can get involved. There's organizations like Not For Sale that you can go to their website, and there's some very practical things you can do to be involved just on a daily basis of products that you can buy that have slave trade involved in their history and how they were made, and not to buy those kind of things. So those are some immediate things that can be done every day.
Mm-hmm. And is there, as far as the organization that you're involved with, can you tell us a little bit, tell us a name one more time, and is there a website that people can get more information?
Yes. The organization that I work with is called Fundación Revive, the Revive Foundation. You can Google it, or you can go revivemx.com. You can go through my name, craigjoring.com, and link to some of the things that we're doing. You can follow us on Facebook. It's ReviveMX on Facebook, or myself on Facebook. There's lots of ways you can connect.
Mm-hmm. And as far as kind of how long have you been involved in this kind of work?
Well, in the nonprofit work with the poor for 4 years, but I think what you probably are asking, how long have I been working with people for? Maybe 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked on different projects. I started a program that takes place here at the university called the Juneau Summer Project, where we bring between 50 and 70 university students here during the summertime to learn leadership principles and how to serve and those kind of things.
That's great. That's great. And so if people want to come tonight, can you give us that time one more time and the place?
It's 7 o'clock, Chapel by the Lake.
Okay.
It's out by the UAS campus.
Great. And Craig, can you give us just kind of a briefest of brief rundowns of what you'll be talking about this evening?
Sounds good. I'm going to show like a 4-minute video, which will just explain in a very practical way what human trafficking looks like. And then tell a few stories, and then we'll show some pictures and from a PowerPoint, and it won't be a long presentation, but hopefully it'll be informative. And I also want to talk about straight kids too, because that'll be the next project. One thing I didn't mention is that I and the people that I'm associated with did a documentary. It was 2 years in the making. We sent a film team all the way down from Juarez, Mexico to Chile, and taken a year in filming trafficking. The documentary now is on Netflix, and you can also get it at places like Amazon.com, and you can order it through there.
But and it's what's called, that called?
Yeah. It's called Volviendo. That means returning in Spanish. It's V-O-L-V-I-E-N-D-O. So if you want to watch it on Netflix for free, it's in English, and so you can order it. I mean, you can just watch it on Netflix, or you can order it from almost most of the major places where you can order things on the Internet. So,
yeah.
And so we made that to this video, this documentary, just explained what trafficking is. And so I'll show a clip from that tonight, too. So.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for coming to talk to us about this. It's really important and actually really fascinating work, because, you know, it's how we related to Juneau. It'll be really interesting, because I think there's a lot of people here who want to do, you know, to help. So
that would be really cool if people can make the local connections and just fight trafficking wherever they're at.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Craig and Eric. And, thanks for coming on and talking to us about this.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah.
Yo lo que quiero es un burrito que me lleve lejos, que me lleve. Yo lo que quiero un avioncito que me vuele. Que me huele lejos, que me huele. No te preocupes, sigue
sigue tu camino y deja que te lleve el destino. Si tú sientes que no puedes respirar, es que algo bueno está por pasar. No te preocupes si sientes un vacío y a veces hasta te crees perdido. Si tú sabes lo que quieres alcanzar, no hay nada que te pueda parar. Que me lleve, que me lleve lejos, que me lleve, que me lleve.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. And last but not least, of course, it's Nancy DeJourney with Arts Up. Hi, Nancy. Well,
hi, how are you?
I'm well. Yourself?
I'm doing fine.
Great. So what's going on in this fabulous capital
city?
Well,
you know, it's summertime, and there's a few things going on. We got the STAR program. You know a little bit about that.
A little bit.
Yes, Guys and Dolls, King Lear, Cinderella.
That's
all
right.
All doing well.
That's
and
right.
And being performed not at the Noise Pavilion this year, right?
Yeah, they're actually at Perseverance Theater, and they
like
open
real,
next Friday.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Very exciting. We have, let's see, the TEDx Success at the Downtown Library is at 6 o'clock tonight. It's a free program, and I like those talks. They're fun.
They're really cool.
Kon-Tiki, Gold Town Show in Kon-Tiki, sort of an old thing. You've talked about the King Island Christmas. We got La Traviata being rehearsed.
And oh, really?
I think that's coming up pretty soon. Let's see, Food Truck Fridays, big deal.
Totally big deal.
It seems to be getting bigger and longer. You know, we say it starts at 5:30, but it really starts earlier than that and seems to go later. So this week, of course, you've talked with Rick Trostel. It's his farewell performance, and I don't remember how many years he's been here, but a long time.
A lot.
Many things that we can thank Rick for. And this will be our opportunity to do that, so come to that. It is also an opportunity to hear King Island Christmas, and there's the shorthand File Jerks Come Kirk at the Alaskan Bar late.
Ooh, very cool.
Yeah, so you can do your Food Truck Friday, get your barbecue, go down to the... That on Saturday, there's a Raku workshop with Louise Kunstada at the Canvas. I suspect you might have to have been taking the Raku stuff all up to this point, but nonetheless, stop in. Canvas has wonderful programs. If you've never been down there to see all the stuff that they do, just make it a point sometime. Plus, they've got Pie in the Sky.
And it's a win-win, really.
I really, you know. You can't go wrong with cookies and brownies and things like that. The Saturday thing is happening. That's over at JEDC. This is where you get to take, remember when you were a kid and you'd take alarm clocks apart and figure out how to put them back together?
Yeah.
Well, that's what they do over there. They just stuff. You can take stuff apart and put it back together, and it's just an opportunity for folks to fool our kids to like play with stuff.
That's really neat.
Yeah, I think it's a really good idea. There's a cartooning class at the Canvas. There is the sing-along for King Island Christmas, of course, at 3 o'clock on Saturday. I want to just insert right here. On Saturday is our 40th, and you can see this fabulous new logo I'm wearing.
Nancy has this really cool 40. It looks like maybe Aurora Project did it.
Yeah, Aurora Project. You can go down
tell.
And get it yourself. It's a fabulous design that Allison Caputo did for our 40th anniversary, which we're going to celebrate on Saturday from 1 to 1:40. There will be cake. And we're going to put our season tickets on a very special secret surprise 40% discount. I didn't say it out loud.
Super secret.
Super
I love
secret.
It.
Yeah. So,
I love it. Oh, I didn't know the party was Saturday.
Yeah, see?
Can you come? Can you come?
I hope so. What am I doing? I don't know. I've got to go home and make cake, though. Anyway, so there's that happening, and then there's the King Island Christmas, and then there's some more King Island Christmas on Saturday. And then on Sunday, you could go listen to ukuleles at Rockwell Costa's Diner. And 6:30 is Music on the Fly. This week, it is the Traveler Duo, which is Jim Noel and Doug Bridges.
Oh, nice.
And I just have to say, I go out every Sunday, and people are really liking it. People are bringing their kids, bringing a little sack lunch or something, and just sitting and listening to the music. Kids can run around. And And another exciting thing that just happened is that we are going to be able to move a piano out there. So people who can play the piano can be part of our music on the fly. So, and we want to run this program all the way through until, you know, year round. It won't be every Sunday, but starting in October, probably just around holiday times or holiday travel and stuff like that. But and Sunday afternoons or Sunday evenings, the 66 and 67 flights seem to be really nice ones to play for. So,
oh, well, very cool.
Yeah, just come out for that sometime if you're got nothing else going on a Sunday. On Monday, what are we doing? Oh, there's an arts roundtable at noon, and we're going to talk about technically art, probably, which is a plan that we have to get people trained up to be stage managers or to run lights or to help at the high school with running the lighting and closing the curtains and just being stage hands. And also, you know, a lot of times people come to the Jack and they just don't really, they want to put on an event, but they're really not sure of how to go about all the marketing pieces, how to plan it, what are the first steps. And so this is a multi-pronged thing. It's a joint project between the high school Perseverance Theater and the Jack. We're going to talk about how do you front and back put on a performance, what do you need, and hopefully train up some folks who might be interested in becoming lighting designers. Art Roach is going to do a 3-series. I mean, I think we should get college credit for attending.
I'm going to take it. I'm really excited.
You know, you go from concept, like what can lighting do, and then to let's write that down and see how we get, how do we express that, and then how do we actually implement it in the lighting department. Kathleen is going to talk about how you actually document the choreography of a stage, running the stage or show, and which is way more complicated than most people really realize.
It's huge.
You have to be very detail-oriented, and you have to be very sort of sequential, I think. Understand that if you're going to have something happening over here, something over here needs to be happening. She'll talk to you about that. And Ankari is fabulous at marketing. She has a whole system and a plan. And we're going to have all of our volunteer descriptions for ushers and learn how to use, I think we're going to go to scanning tickets this year, sort of. So if you at all interested, this whole thing is free, and you can get more information about it on our website. That's next weekend, but
that's,
I wanted you to think about it.
It's such an amazing opportunity because we have so many arts events that happen in Juneau, and for every person that is on stage or, you know, it takes just as many people backstage.
If not more.
If not more.
Sometimes I'm wondering.
Yeah, what a fabulous opportunity. Yeah,
yeah, and there's one more opportunity that I want to make sure people are aware of, which is the Grantsmanship Workshop that we have coming up the week following. There are still slots available, and I believe they still might have some scholarships. And this is a week-long. People are coming from all over the state for this. The Grantsmanship Foundation is a wonderful. It helps you seek out grants, find the ones that were appropriate for your project that you're doing, and helps you with the writing, helps you with sort of figuring out what you need to do. So that's another opportunity that is coming up that I don't want people to miss, and you do have to plan ahead for that one. So let's see. We forgot Tuesday. There's a form line design class at the Canvas, and Wednesday, Devil's Club Live at the Viking, and that's late. And Thursday night, I think we're back to the regular stuff. So I hope to see you out and about.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fabulous weekend. So the big is, I'm just kind of planning my weekend in my
okay,
brain.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So as far as big things to hit this weekend, we've got Food Truck Fridays with Rick Trussell, which we heard a lot about this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday, what's the party again? I need a little more party action.
Well, it's in the middle of the afternoon, so it's just like a children's party. And it's not very long. It's from 1 to 1:40. It's in celebration of our 40th anniversary, and we're going to have 40% off our season tickets, which this year is huge. The tickets, I mean, if you were to buy them at regular price, the tickets for this season is well over $260. So you're getting a dang deal if you come and down and do this. But you only got that minute, 40 minutes.
Wow, 40 minutes. You snooze, you lose.
Yes, yeah, yes, that's the way it works. But anyway, and also, I mean, you have 3 opportunities to see King Island at any time. And So the star things don't start till next week.
That's right,
next week. But we need to be planning about that. And then we've got the music on the fly type things. And then there's just things going on at different restaurants and bars and whatnot. So,
yeah. Where can we check out the full calendar?
At jahc.org. And if you want your stuff on the calendar, be sure to get it to us. We got First Friday coming up, so if you got a First Friday opening, be sure I know about it.
Oh, wow. Okay. And where can we send that email to, Nancy?
You can send it to nancy@jahc.org or firstfriday@jahc.org.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Nancy, to Journey with Arts Up. Always, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is still the heart of the industry. A lot of the muscle around it has...